I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you serious?
Yeah, look at this thing. I got blood everywhere.
Where'd you come from?
I'm just sitting here doing a radio show. I'm not doing anything physical, and all of a sudden, blood everywhere. But don't worry, I'll be all right. Before we get back to your baseball calls, obviously very baseball-heavy day. Mets and the Yankees both making trades today, 6 days before the deadline. Yankees acquiring Ryan McMahon, Mets acquiring Gregory Soto. More on that and what each team should do next. But a couple of things from the NFL. With football sort of back, one thing I really enjoy doing is listening to Brian Daboll, listening to Aaron Glenn, and even listening to the players. Mainly because I miss football,
yep.
But then also because you never know what they're going to say. I have to start with something that Elijah Vera Tucker said.
Ooh, EVT. And AVT.
I don't know how much attention it's got. Now, you can also slap me across the head and said, right. Evan, this is not a big deal. I thought it was a monstrous deal. I thought AVT basically ran the truck over Robert Saleh.
Did he really?
And gave us hope for 2025 with Aaron Glenn as the new head coach. So here's a short clip of Elijah Vera Tucker, very innocently. It's training camp. Everybody's calm. But sometimes when you calm, the truth comes out. Let us hear from starting guard AVT.
Kind of backing on what Sauce and Garrett said, you know, I can see this thing turning around for sure, especially with Glenn, the type of coach he is. You know, he praises physicality, but even more like accountability. You know, I think that's very important for a head coach to do. You know, it's something I haven't seen as much of in my career.
Oh, if he hadn't said the last line, Robert Saleh would have escaped scot-free.
Yes.
But because he's... Where'd he go to college?
AVT, I forgot.
I forget, too, but it doesn't matter. But whatever. He's been in the league long enough that he's talking about the NFL.
Yes.
He's not talking about his college tenure. So, basically, the lack of accountability...
USC, I forgot that. USC.
Maybe his coaches, his coach got fired, right?
He's talking about Robert Saleh.
I know, but his coach in college got fired, and then it was, I forget the guy from Oklahoma, it doesn't even matter. But the point is, he was talking about his situation with the New York Jets, and like lack of accountability.
Yes!
I mean, that's harsh. That's the worst thing you can say about a manager or a coach.
No question!
And it's funny, because it's what we've been saying about Aaron Boone. It just feels like there's a lack of accountability because of what he says about or doesn't say about his players playing terrible.
We have a very good defensive club.
Absolutely. And as Jet fans for the last 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, 15 years, 30 years, one of the consistent things we have bitched about is undiscipline.
Right.
Undiscipline. We've said it a lot. And under Robert Saleh, it felt worse. And I remember one of the criticisms, Joe brought this up like basically from get-go, even though he was texting Robert Saleh, which is, hey, Robert's too nice of a guy.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't hold people accountable. And my point was, it's all about results. And the results stink. They've been bad. And one of the things I'm hoping for with Coach Aaron Glenn is accountability, a lack of undisciplined penalties, and we'll see if that changes. Like, you could talk a great game in July. It doesn't mean that's going to change come September.
Mm-hmm.
But for Vera Tucker to not only say, hey, Aaron Glenn brings this, but then to point out, I've seen very little of that my first few years in the NFL.
Yeah, but even more like accountability.
But I think about what that means. Like when you say, I haven't seen accountability and you're seeing it now, what does that entail? Like specifically, what's he talking about? And my guess would be that when something goes awry at practice, you miss a block, you whatever, assignment bust, that you're called out on it. It's not just, hey, you know, be better. It's you're sitting in a meeting, you're going through the film, and you get crushed in front of everybody.
Yeah.
Because it forces an accountability. You're sitting there like, oh, crap. He's talking about me. I'll be better, coach. Yeah. Oh, crap. Like, so, like, that's accountability in a subtle way that matters because now your teammates are going to hold you accountable for it. But until the coach does it and does it in a forceful and meaningful way, then you just kind of forget about it. So I suspect that's what Aaron Glenn is doing because he seems no nonsense.
Now,
I don't know if he's sitting in on offensive meetings and calling guys out, but that's what it feels like he's talking about.
And I love it.
I do too.
I heard that quote today and I got fired up. First of all, I thought it was a gem. I thought it was like, you know, in the middle of all the boringness that comes out of training camp, here's Elijah Vera Tucker basically running the truck over Robert Saleh.
Right.
And it's nothing personal against Robert Saleh, but I think what also speaks to me as a Jet fan is that we saw that.
Mm-hmm.
We saw lack of accountability.
Yeah, lack of discipline. Too many penalties, too many busts.
Yes.
Things of that nature.
Constantly.
The little things.
Constantly.
Do the little things well, you give yourself so much better of a chance to win.
And that's why I believe the Jets have a chance to have a good year. Mm. Because I believe the coaching has to be better. Now, the jury's out on Aaron Glenn. The jury's out on his entire coaching staff. Last year was such a cluster with the Jets because as much as I didn't trust Robert Saleh, didn't like Robert Saleh as a coach, not as a person, I think firing him when they did was ass backwards.
Right.
They should have concluded the season with Robert Saleh and his coaching staff, and I think the results would have been better.
It torpedoed the season.
Completely.
Even if you think it was the right thing to do, it torpedoed the season. Now, maybe if I was reevaluating how the Jets fired Robert Saleh, they should have done it 8 weeks later.
Right.
Like week 11, 12 or something like that. Because you do it just to tell whoever the future prospect is, we have an opening at head coach.
Absolutely.
Right? We are going to be thinking about you. You're subliminally telling people that. But to do it after week 4 made no sense.
Firing coaches in the middle of an NFL season make no sense.
No.
In the NBA, it's different.
Right.
In baseball, it's different. In hockey, it's different. In the NFL, it serves no purpose other than giving blood to fans, as I have blood all over my
right. Well, unless the season's lost. Week 12, 13, there's nothing to play for.
But even then, what are you doing it for?
Because you're just setting up to get your next guy.
Fair enough. So you're setting up to find the guy that you're going to replace him with.
You're not setting up to get your next guy in week 5.
Right.
You're just not.
That's what made it dumb. So golden comment by Elijah Vera Tucker.
Right.
The other thing I noticed today is Aaron Glenn began his press conference. I love Aaron Glenn so far. Mm. Now, he's got to win some games, but so far, even when I criticize him, I love the guy. He is firing me up. He's making me believe. He starts his press conference today lecturing us. Take a listen and tell me if I'm being too sensitive of Aaron Glenn basically lecturing everybody about what happened yesterday with Justin Fields.
Justin, he's going to be day-to-day. He has this toe that was dislocated. So the huge storm that was created really made no sense. And I think that's a lesson for all of us of, guys, let's just wait till we get the diagnosis. I will not BS you. All right, I will tell you exactly what it is, and we'll move on. So that shouldn't happen again. All right, so any questions?
Yeah. Can I make a comment, Coach Glenn?
All right.
And again, I love you. I start by saying that my criticism is not, I hate you, or, oh, my God, we're going through Mangini all over again. I love you, AG. The storm wasn't created by me or us or Jet fans or the media. The storm was created by the fact that you stretchered off your quarterback. He was on a cart.
Right.
And he's being carted off because of what we thought was a non-contact injury. How did you expect us to react? Did you expect us to say, it's probably no big deal? No biggie, as Tommy would say.
Right.
Like, I don't mind being lectured when we're crazy. I don't think we were crazy to be concerned about our quarterback being carted off.
I'm just wondering now why Justin Fields needed to be carted off, or if he wanted to be carted off.
What do you mean?
Or, like, why was he carted off?
Because his toe hurts?
Your toe hurts. Limp the hell inside.
That would have been better.
It better not be the pinky toe either.
It's the ring toe.
It better not. Well, I mean, I'd rather have be the ring toe, which doesn't exist, but since this is what we're going with now, fourth toe. I'd rather it be the fourth toe than the pinky toe.
Have they confirmed the toe, Connor?
If it's the pinky toe, I'm going to be like,
that would bother you?
It would bother me.
I think they haven't confirmed because they don't know what to call each of those toes. Is it the ring toe? I don't know.
That's the problem. I just, like, I love Aaron Glenn being a hard ass. And I admit, like, if I was face-to-face with Aaron Glenn, I'd be all ready to be tough, and I'd ask him a tough question.
Right.
And then he would completely undress me. And I'm not sure how I'd respond. Maybe I'd give it back a little bit, but I'd be scared. He's very intimidating, and I love that about him.
Right.
But why are you saying we created a storm when you guys guard off your quarterback? Like, what were we supposed to do? Like, there are times in which we as fans over-exaggerate, the media over-exaggerates.
Right.
When Justin Fields is carted off a practice field, what would the proper response have been? Let's wait and see. We can't do that. We've seen him carted off.
He should have just limped off, and then it would have solved all of this.
Which means it's Justin Fields' fault.
No, it's probably the training staff's fault.
They're being too cautious?
Yes, they're being too cautious. And so, oh, it's our quarterback. It's get the guard. Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a toe.
I'll tell you, for a boring offseason, I think the Jets training camp has been more entertaining than the Giant training camp. Because so far, Brian Daboll doesn't answer anything, right. Doesn't give you anything. And it's just,
I love that about Dave, though. I've grown to like enjoy him absolutely doing nothing or saying nothing.
It's only annoying when they're losing. That's when it's a problem.
Yes.
And I remember this with Mangini when he was here. In his first year, the Jets won. They won 10 games. They had like a shockingly good year. They made the playoffs and he was Manginius. And everybody loved him. He was on The Sopranos. In year two, when things went bad and he wouldn't tell us which knee was injured to Jonathan Vilma, it became, dude, what are you doing?
Right.
So I think in the case of Dave's, in training camp, it's fun. It's no big deal. I think if they start 0-3, it's obnoxious.
Right.
That's where I think
it goes.
Right.
But right now, there's nothing to say.
Season.
There's nothing to say.
No, I get you. There's nothing to say. No, AVT said a lot. Mm-hmm. Basically buried Robert Saleh.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get back to your phone calls. A lot of baseball on this Friday. We are 6 days away from the trade deadline, and the Yankees and Mets have struck. If you're just tuning in, Mets acquired Gregory Soto, left-handed reliever from the Baltimore Orioles, and the Yankees have added a third baseman. The long-rumored Ryan McMahon is coming to Yankee Stadium. Not in the lineup tonight, but is on his way to be the everyday third baseman. Corey is in Manalapan. Good afternoon today, Corey.
Hey, thank you, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
No problem.
Well, this is how I look at it. If this is a prelude to doing something else, then I guess I'm all for it. But maybe I'm pessimistic, but I've seen Brian Cashman in action, and maybe this is 2 years too late with this guy McMahon and these other people who Cashman swears are great. They're horrible.
Cool.
And this is why this team is in the flux that they're in.
Who are you talking about?
Right.
Because I think his offseason was really good.
Peraza,
this year.
Peraza's not that good.
Okay, but he's a prospect. I mean, he came up through the system. So
listen, you put Dominguez in left field, you're going to get what you get all the time. Balls over his head, misplays. Guys, people are playing out of position. I blame Boone because I can't stand him. But Cashman is the guy that puts this team together.
Right. I mean, so in that regard, Corey, you're right. Guys have been out of position.
Out of position. I don't think they're out of position now.
Right. Now they're back in position. And I think his offseason, and if you go into last season, have been pretty good. Bringing in Jazz was a good thing. Right. I think bringing in Cody Bellinger was a good thing.
Yeah.
Paul Goldschmidt, it's a good thing.
Max Fried so far, good thing.
Good thing. Yeah. I think so far, you can't look at him and say terrible acquisition. And if you're going to talk about Oswald Peraza, he came up through the system.
Well, he's a failed prospect.
He just sucks. He's a failed prospect.
That's a fair criticism. Like
100%. That's not him evaluating talent. Well, you drafted the kid, and you thought he was going to be... He almost made the team two years ago.
It's a knock on player development, which has faced some criticism, and there's a mixed bag to this. Like, forget Aaron Judge, because that's been... King Aaron Judge, because that's a decade ago.
Yeah.
But if you look at recent successes and failures... While Austin Wells hasn't had a great year, I would say the development of Austin Wells has been a success. I'd say the development of Ben Rice is almost a success.
Yeah, it's getting there.
Volpe has not been. I agree. That's an L so far.
But Jason Dominguez is almost a success as well.
Yeah, I think the jury's still out on Jason. He's still so young. He's 22 years old. And sometimes we do need to be patient with young players. Now, there's that moment where you say, okay, I'm no longer patient. You're not any good. I think we've gotten there with Volpe. I think that's happened over the last year to all of us where we say, okay, yes, he's young. Yes, I'm patient. I've decided he's not very good. That is way too early to judge on Jason Dominguez.
Right.
We're just not there yet with him. But the out of position thing I do want to address, because I told you earlier today I was re-listening to what Brian Cashman said a few weeks ago when he DFA'd DJ LeMahieu. Let's just this briefly, because it is convoluted, and I think it was a no-win situation. DJ LeMahieu went to Brian Cashman and the New York Yankees and said, physically, I cannot play third base. I can't do it. I believe my injuries are related to playing third base. I can only play second base. So he's your player. He's telling you this information. According to Brian Cashman, he wasn't refusing to play third base, but he believed that he could not physically play third base. That's why, upon DJ's return, he was playing second base and Jazz was playing third. So again, when your other options are Oswald Peraza and Yorbit Vivas, because Oswaldo Cabrera went down, and you have a player telling you, I can't play third base, their only option was to move Jazz back to third.
Right. And it felt like an okay option because Jazz was pretty good last year.
Right.
Third base.
He was good last year, and they looked at DJ and said, you know what? Maybe he's going to give us more than Vivas and Peraza, which he did. He was hitting 260. He wasn't great, but was he better than those other options? He was. Now, so this is why this is going on. We didn't know this at the time, but now we do.
Right.
So now DJ's really struggling defensively. Jazz is having his issues at third. And Aaron Boone makes a decision, and Cash was specific. Aaron Boone made a decision. It's best for our team for Jazz to go back to second.
Right. Even though we were screaming it for weeks.
Correct. But we didn't know. Part of the reason was DJ LeMahieu had privately said, I can't play third base.
Yeah, because in my mind, I felt like he was a third baseman.
He was, until he said he couldn't do it anymore. So now Boone makes this decision. DJ's pissed. DJ's like, I can't play third base. The Yankees are like, all right, let's talk. Because Cash said, I talked to him multiple times about playing third base. And Cashman kind of made it like he wasn't refusing like he's a selfish diva. He was saying to them, I can't do it.
Right. It's not good for me, and then it won't ultimately be good for you,
so,
us as a team.
Correct. So Boone's already decided, hey, listen, we're better off with Jazz at second base. They can't agree on what DJ's role is because DJ will not play third base. Mm-hmm. So now what is he? He's a backup second baseman?
Right. He can't DH, so it's like, why would you anyways?
Hence they DFA him.
Right.
But my point is, we've been screaming about the out-of-position stuff. We were then given color to why. And the why was created by DJ LeMahieu's insistence that he couldn't play third base. And so what would you do? Like, let's go back to spring training. Would you have DFA'd him in spring training? By the way, if you did, it would have been the same crop they've been dealing with.
No.
Which is Vivas and Peraza and until Oswaldo got hurt, Oswaldo. Right.
But if you had done it in spring training, there would be much more of an urgency to find a permanent solution. I mean, the real issue is that Cabrera got hurt. And so once he got hurt, you lost what you thought you could do at third base.
And I think the other issue was, so Oswaldo gets hurt, you're right. Because he would have been another key cog here. The other thing that happened is Jazz struggled and DJ struggled.
Mm-hmm.
And Boone made a decision. Again, Cashman claims this is Boone's decision, not his. Hey, we're better off with Jazz back at second. Well, once they go Jazz back to second, DJ's dead. Because he's already telling you he can't play third base.
Right.
And so that's where this problem, which you're right, could have been resolved in spring training if they traded for Arenado or got a real third baseman, got exacerbated.
Yes.
Second try.
Yep. Nailed it.
By the fact that DJ LeMahieu, and I'm still kind of confused why physically third base, bad. Second base, I'm good.
Well, what foot was it?
Oh, I forgot. You think it was part of the foot thing?
Yeah.
But why would third base be a problem? You have to move more at second base.
Yeah, but if you're...
You need more range at second base.
But diving to your left, to your his your right now. This one,
the quick reflexes.
Yeah,
you mean?
Just
I'll check out what foot it was. But do you think that matters?
Yeah, because at third, I mean that ball is coming at you fast, especially with right-handed batters who are pull hitters. I mean you got to be able to move and jump and dive.
Right foot.
So right foot. Yeah, it doesn't really make sense because you're not diving that way. But I don't know. He physically didn't think he could cover the ground at third, but he could cover it at second. Doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't.
Unless it was just the quickness of the reflex.
And if DJ was willing to play third base, even if it was at a bad level, the Yankees would have been better off for the last month because here's how this would have worked. He would have played third base. Mm-hmm. He would have hit 250, which is 100 points better than Peraza. And late in games, he would have come out.
Right. But he didn't want to do it.
He didn't want to do it.
But if he didn't want to do it and you said, you're still going to do it, would he have done it?
That's
what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Because he would have been unhappy, but at least he'd be here, and you'd have a 260 hitter as opposed to a 120 hitter.
No, you're right. You're right. And here's the other part. Where's DJ now? Because he got DFA 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Has anyone shown any interest in him as an exclusive first/second baseman? Let's go to Avery in Hamilton. Good afternoon today, Avery.
How's it going? Thanks for taking the call.
Pleasure. Good, man. What's up?
What really gets me in a tizzy, and it's Yankee fans specifically, but to a lesser extent, the Yankees organization, we need to throw away the term untouchable prospects. When is the last time a Yankees prospect that was considered untouchable ended up being an untouchable talent in baseball? Like, Aaron Judge was never an untouchable prospect. When he came up with Austin, Austin was the better prospect. Volpe was an untouchable prospect. Jason Dominguez was an untouchable prospect. Going back to Montero in 2011, he was an untouchable prospect who ended up being traded. I would send Schlittler, I would send Jones to Minnesota myself. I'll drive him myself if Joe Ryan's the return.
Right. I don't believe, it's a great point. I don't believe anybody's untouchable. In fact, right. Brian Cashman was asked about, is there anybody that's untouchable? Here's his answer.
Some less touchable than others.
That means nobody's untouchable.
The best part is after Brian gave that answer, yeah. He thought about it, and then...
There's some more touchable than others.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. However it works.
He made himself laugh.
All right.
I don't think anyone's untouchable. It's just a matter of what makes it worth it. So we were talking earlier about a fictitious trade with Minnesota where the Yankees would
Touching it is kind of fun.
Johan Duran and Joe Ryan. Mm-hmm. That's a great return. You're getting an elite-level closer, a top-of-the-rotation starter, both under team control. Like... I'd be much more willing to trade untouchables
right.
for that kind of package than it would be Eugenio Suarez, who's a free agent at the end of the year.
Right, but it better be something like that if you're going to give away Cam Schlittler.
Yeah.
Or Spencer Jones.
But I would do it.
Yeah. But it better be something that's sustainable and real
as opposed to,
let's take a lottery.
I agree.
Let's take a lottery ticket back.
I agree. Like Dylan Cease, who's now newly available, is a free agent at the end of the year. I'm not trading Spencer Jones for that. I remember last year when Tanner Scott was available and a lot of Yankee fans wanted Tanner Scott. I think even our very own Sean Morash said he would trade Spencer Jones for Tanner Scott.
Right.
Like that one is very real. I wouldn't do that. But when we're talking about this made up package, and we'll talk to Jack Curry in about an hour about this and see if there is any validity to the Twins moving guys like this. Joe Ryan and Johan Duran, let's go. Then, to quote Brian Cashman, that's less touchable than other touchables.
SNY has the Spencer Jones home runs on right now.
Yes.
Man.
They're impressive.
Those are impressive.
But you know what's
See, that's the issue, though. With a kid like that, you want to see that in a Yankee uniform. With a kid like Cam Schlittler, you want to see 100-mile-an-hour untouchable fastball in a Yankee uniform.
I understand that,
but you just want to see it. And it's really hard to say, all right, but we need to win now. Let's kick them out the door.
Right, but you're winning now with young players who can be here in the future, too. Again, I'm not trading Spencer Jones and Cam Schlittler for Eugenio Suarez, who they're obviously not, but that's a rental. That's a veteran who may not be back.
Right.
Those two players we're talking about are under team control, young, and really good. And so the odds of it working out in your favor are really high. Now, the one thing our last caller said that I don't love to rely on is, when was the last time the Yankees had untouchables become that good? Because Spencer Jones has nothing to do with Jesus Montero. Jesus Montero was traded a decade ago. You know what I mean? Like, yes, he didn't become a star. But just because they were sort of wrong about Jesus Montero or they built him enough to trade him doesn't mean they're going to be wrong about Spencer Jones or anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But I think to answer Brian Cashman's question of what's untouchable and what's not untouchable, it comes down to what I'm getting. It's the return, man.
Right.
To quote a wise man who is still alive, the great Ted DiBiase, everybody's got a price for the $1 million man. By the way, what's his name? Oh, yeah, Al Cintron, who I love, was very upset with me for not understanding or announcing the Hulk Hogan theme song correctly yesterday. Like, I tried to sing along, and I forgot a lot of the words. So he sent me this message. Take a listen. Here we go.
Evan.
Yeah.
Evan. You claim to be a diehard wrestling fan, and yet you butchered the living you-know-what out of one of the greatest wrestling theme songs of all time.
Yeah.
Listen,
I'll put my wrestling knowledge up against anybody, but my music knowledge, that sucks. So as much as I remember the,
I am a real American,
fight for what's right of every man. I didn't remember the beginning words. I'm sorry. You know what song I screw up every once in a while? And this is probably the funniest song to screw up for me. Because I hear the song every day. I've heard the song probably thousands of times in my life. I've sang along thousands of times. And yet, if you put me on the spot, I could screw it up. Are you ready?
Tell me.
Take me out to the ballgame.
Take me out. Yeah, I could see that.
Take me out. Let's see if I can get it right. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks.
You wanted to say Apple Jacks, didn't you?
Kind of.
I don't know why I just see you saying Apple.
I don't care if we ever get back because it's root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame because it's 1, 2, 3 strikes. Okay, I got it.
I think that was written by someone who had never been to a ball game.
Why?
I just remember listening to a podcast about it.
Oh, it's a real thing.
It was written by someone who imagined what it was like to go to a ball game.
Oh, I got you. I thought you were saying the song sounds as if it was.
And so it's written like, actually do this, because I've never gone.
Right.
So take me out to the ball game.
Oh. So it's like you're asking the person.
Yes. It's interesting. It's a request.
Yes.
It's not like a reflection of the majesty of being at a ballpark.
No, I got you. It's still a good song, man.
It is.
And it works. Bottom of the seventh inning, I think, in every ballpark but Houston. You know what they do in Houston?
No.
I could be wrong about this, but I went to an Astros game a decade ago, and I was stunned that there was no Take Me Out to the Ball Game. They played the Deep in the Heart of Texas song. Deep in the heart of Texas.
The stars at night are big and bright.
Is that what it is?
Yep.
Deep in the heart of Texas. No. Yeah, they do that instead of the... Take me out to the ball game, which feels kind of crazy. Let's go to John up in Syracuse. What's going on today, John?
Okay, Evan, I spoke with you briefly yesterday about rooting for the Yankees.
Well, you have to root for the Yankees today. You have to root for the Yankees today if you're a Met fan. That is a no-brainer.
I don't know why I should be expected to root for the Yankees just because it's going to help the Mets. The Mets shouldn't depend on other teams for them to...
They're not
them.
Depending
they
on other
teams.
No, but hold on. You can do both. What do you mean? Of course the Mets have to win their games, but when the Phillies are playing in the middle of a pennant race, you're rooting for the team that's playing the Phillies to beat them. What's so hard to understand about that?
It's not a guarantee that the Mets are going to lose the division if the Phillies sweep the Yankees this weekend.
Nobody said it is, but you're still better off with the Phillies losing.
No, but they shouldn't have to depend on that.
It's not depending. No, because this is annoying me. I don't like your argument that you're making against me, but we'll still have it. Tonight, when you... I'm not even saying you're going to watch the game. It's on Apple TV, by the way. When you flash the Yankees score...
I watch the Yankees games.
When you watch the Yankee game tonight, and King Aaron Judge is up with 2-1 and 2 out, down by a run in the eighth inning, what are you rooting for him to do?
Strike out.
Well, then you hate the Mets. I don't know what else to tell you. You're rooting against your favorite baseball team because it benefits them for the Phillies to lose. The Phillies are playing the Yankees. This is open and shut, bro. I'm sorry. And I know that a lot of people have deep-rooted hate towards the Yankees. I'm not even arguing that.
Let's go Yankees.
Thank you, Tommy.
Let's go Yankees.
That's my favorite one. But it's for our own good.
Yes.
Like, how is this even like a debate?
It's not a debate. Just Met fans just have problems saying, let's go Yankees.
It's not that hard. Let's go Yankees.
Very easy. By the way, Take Me Out to the Ball Game was written in 1908. I was correct.
1908.
Jack Norworth and Albert Von Tisler had never been to a baseball game. Neither one of them.
Mm.
Norworth didn't go to a game until 32 years later.
1940.
And that is baseball.
Tisler didn't go to a baseball game until 20 years later.
Wow.
And their song is still iconic.
You know what jumped out at me as soon as you told that story?
What's that?
They were making Cracker Jacks in 1908. I didn't know that because it's in the song. So Cracker Jacks were a part of baseball even as far back as 1908. Who won the World Series in 1908? Go.
White Sox.
That was a good guess. Cubs played the White Sox, I think, in the World Series a few years earlier. I want you to double check to see how right I am on this.
Okay.
Off the top of my head, my prediction would be the 1908 World Series was between either the Tigers and Cubs or the Tigers and Pirates. And I'm going to go Tigers and Cubs.
Hmm.
You want to fact check me on that?
Are we doing this?
I'm going to look it up myself.
I'm looking at the real lyrics of this song, by the way.
Hold on a second. I'm about to look it up myself.
Because you're reading...
Yes! Cubs over the Tigers!
You were singing the chorus.
Yes.
But the lyrics are, Katie Casey was baseball mad. Had the fever and had it bad, just to root for the hometown crew. Every Soul, Katie Blue, on a Sunday.
Excuse me.
I know.
Who's that?
Her young boo called to see if she'd like to go to see a show. But Miss Katie said, no, I'll tell you what you can do. Take me out to the ball game.
I didn't know that.
They should sing the full song. You know how Ronan Tynan used to do the full God Bless America? Yeah. They should do full Take Me Out to the Ball Game here and there.
That's actually pretty cool.
I completely agree.
How you lead into the chorus.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, you want to go to a show? No, but I will tell you what you can do. Take me out.
It's kind of cool. You're so right, though, Connor. Like, I remember when Ronan Tynan used to do that, and it was like...
They'd complain because it would go on for like 30 minutes.
Right. Someone's got to bring back that other part of Take Me Out to the Ball Game, even though a part of it feels a little dirty. It's okay. It was 1908.
You're saying you don't like the foreplay?
Well, I don't think that that was a whatever. What do we call it? A euphemism? I don't think it was what it was then as it is now.
I know, but when you hear it in 2025, you think of something different.
Exactly.
We'll get back to your calls in a second. If you've missed any of the show, you could rewind on the Odyssey app. You could always listen to us on iHeartRadio or the TuneIn app. In less than an hour, a little after 5 o'clock, we'll talk to Jack Curry. Does a great job on the Yes Network concerning what more will the Yankees do? They got their third baseman. What's next and who's next? 888-808-1019. We are live.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I feel bad doing this, but I feel like I have to do this. I'm not one, I think you know this about me 2 years in, I'm not one to claim, hey, you're ripping me off, hey, you're copying me, I invented this, I did that. I'm not that kind of guy.
Right.
All right? I took a few things from Craig. That wasn't one. Let that be Craig. That's not me. With that said, a few people have told me they believe SNY, and I love you, SNY. Hello, SNY. SNY is ripping me off. There are a few people that believe that. So if you are watching our show on television right now, you may have noticed that right before we came back, there was this little bit that they do where Gary Cohen goes through an old scorecard and relives his memory of that game.
Oh, it happens to be a book that we know about that's like that.
Thank you. So you tell me, because I'm not a bad guy, I'm not the one to say SNY is copying me, gimmick infringement. Do you believe that that bit that's kind of recent, Gary Cohen going through his scorecards and reminiscing about a random Met game, do you believe that is a ripoff of my book, My Mets Bible?
Narrated by me, Evan Roberts.
But you narrated, too, for the audio version as well. Is it a ripoff? No. I think it is just inspiration.
Okay.
Inspiration from Evan Roberts for SNY to do something that was really cool. Because you told a ton of great stories in here.
Thank you.
There is one story, however, that you left out.
Uh-oh.
This is the story. You told me about it.
What's that?
And you second thought why you left it out.
Oh, yeah.
Your first date with your wife.
Yeah.
You left it out.
That's a bad job, Adam.
What was the game again?
Mets Braves on a Sunday afternoon.
And who won?
The Mets in extra innings.
Exactly.
Yeah, bad job, Adam.
You should have known.
Bad job, Adam.
That's when it happened.
That's bad.
That's when the spark, that's when the love was created. You guys watched the Mets beat the Braves.
I know.
Who sucked this year, and you still can't beat them.
Yeah.
But you beat them. And then you married the girl. And you left it out of the damn book, Evan.
Yeah, that was a misfire on my part. It was our third date, but it was early
close
on.
Close enough.
And we went out, and you're right. Of all these stories I have in My Mets Bible, that's a mistake. It was a mistake I made. If I make a second edition, I may include it.
Nice.
Either way, even if you're ripping me off, SNY, I'm honored. I just wanted to bring it up because a few people have brought it up to me.
Imitation is the greatest form of flattery.
Absolutely. Now, one other thing I want to address before you get back to your calls. I was gone for 2 weeks, but I heard stuff. And one of the things I heard was a prediction that was made right here on this station a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that prediction was about me. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's take a listen to something that was said a week ago in terms of a prediction of something that would happen to Evan Roberts. Take a listen.
Long-term prediction. Is Evan Roberts sick at any point next week?
Yes.
Yep, we all agree, right?
I'm like, oh. He will be sick till Labor Day.
Yep.
Is my prediction.
Yep.
Coughing all over the newsroom and sneezing into everything.
We will get Evan Roberts sick.
Well, the week is over. Am I sick?
No, you're not. And it's the two guys who happen to not be here today.
That's right. Maybe they're sick.
Even though I did agree with them.
I know. I heard you in there. Everybody thought I was going to get sick because I was coming back from Europe. Well, full week of action, I feel good.
I don't want to jinx this right now.
Either way, Sean Morash will be back on Monday. Tommy will be back on Monday. I do expect them and you all on Monday to wear L's.
L's.
I do.
Well, I think we still have a couple like days before you figure out whether or not you're sick.
Well, I got through the week. Isn't that really what counts?
You could be incubating something that just pops up over the weekend.
But wait, hold on.
You are celebrating awfully early here, Evan. It can get ugly over the weekend.
But if I get sick on a Saturday,
yeah,
didn't I win? I didn't get sick during the week. Isn't that what he said?
Yeah, but things take a while.
Hold on. Can we listen to him one more time? I got to hear it clearly.
Germs. He's like talking about Labor Day.
Well, that was Tommy basically saying I'm going to be sick for a month. But let's hear again, when was I going to get sick?
Long-term prediction. Is Evan Roberts sick at any point next week?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yep, we all agree, right?
Stop it. Any point next week, I win.
True.
This week is over in about an hour and a half.
Right.
6:30, it's over. I'm in my car going home. Who cares if I barf? It's over. I win.
I'll wear my own now.
Oh, you can wear your own now? You going to get it out of the way? Yeah. I appreciate that. So Tiki Barber's about to do something he's never done in the history of this show. I've worn an L. Sean's worn an L. Tiki has never worn an L.
Yeah.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, on July 25th at 4:43 p.m., Tiki Barber is now putting on an L to wear.
Evan, we have an hour and a half left. You are asking for a case of neurovirus to hit you at 5:30. You really are. It's dangerous.
I know it is. I'm really playing with fire right now. He's the one putting the L on.
If he gets sick, then this gets expunged from the record.
Fair enough.
Me wearing the L.
And I have to wear an L.
Yes.
While barfing. All at the same time.
Lovely.
I just wanted to get that done. Let's get back to your calls, 888-808-1019. Mario's in Long Beach. What's shaking, Mario?
What's going on? Real quick, player number one, batting .214, 697 OPS, 13 homers, 54 RBIs. Player two, batting .217, 16 homers, 35 RBIs, 717 OPS. Who are they?
Well, the second guy's Ryan McMahon, because I was really paying attention to that, and I know his numbers, but I didn't really hear the first one. Could you do the first one again?
Yeah, 214 batting average.
Yep.
697 OPS, 13 homers, 54 RBIs.
Volpe?
Yep. Volpe's numbers are better.
Yeah, that's an exciting shortstop third base combination.
Yeah, but wait, hold on. There's a couple of caveats that you are leaving out. Number one, Ryan McMahon is here to replace someone who's hitting .150.
Right.
So what we have said throughout the show, at least what I have said very firmly, is while I don't love Ryan McMahon, and there are other options I would have preferred, he is a clear upgrade over what they currently have.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. Number two, the defense. Part of it, the issues we've had with Volpe is not those offensive numbers. It's the fact that his defense has gone backwards, and for the last 35 games, he's in at .140. So there are caveats to the Volpe struggle. Like, yes, his overall numbers that you read are not the worst. Now, they haven't gone up the way we expected. They're not what Brian Cashman thought upon drafting him years ago or calling him up 3 years ago. But the issues with Volpe are more kind of in the gray area than just strictly those numbers. His defense going backwards and the fact that he's slumping massively. Ryan McMahon has nothing to do with him because Ryan McMahon is replacing the third base situation.
Right. That, and that's really what you were looking for, was an upgrade defensively on the left side of the infield. One, because Volpe has regressed from his Gold Glove rookie season. And at third base, I guess Peraza was fine at third base, but the combination of no hitting on that from those two positions and then having guys out of position earlier in the season, it just feels like you want some stability.
Yeah, and they have
you want a pro.
Yeah.
And you got Ryan McMahon, and he's a pro. Mm-hmm. Now you hope that he just hits better now that he's in a situation or an organization that actually cares about winning. And so just like Trent Grisham coming from San Diego, where he was terrible. What, he hit .215, .220?
He was in the ones a few times.
And now he's hitting .250,
.255.
And so you hope that it just lifts because you're in a place that gives a crap about it.
We've talked a lot about Spencer Jones today, and should the Yankees call him up? Should they trade him? There are a lot of Yankee fans that would not trade him. I mentioned earlier that, yes, in a deal for Joe Ryan and Johan Duran, I would love to trade him. I would do it. Would you guys like to hear a year ago Sean Morash saying he would have traded Spencer Jones for Tanner Scott? Because we do have the audio.
Really?
Take a listen.
Honestly, seeing that return, and it was a monster hole that the Marlins got for Tanner Scott. I have seen enough Yankee prospects fail. I'm not looking to give up Jason Dominguez. If the equivalent was Spencer Jones highlighting that package, The Yankees should have done it.
Wow. Mm-hmm. You would have done that.
I would have done it. I for really would have done it.
Rental reliever.
How about that? He would have traded Spencer Jones for Tanner Scott.
He would have regretted it.
I think now he would have.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think immediately he would have.
You know what, though? Hold on. I got to caveat that. I got to take that back for a second. If they make that trade, Tanner Scott's coming in instead of Nestor Cortez. The Yankees may win the World Series.
That's a great point.
And if they win the World Series, it was worth it. He may not have been wrong, depending on the result.
We didn't even need Tanner Scott in that moment. Throw Tim Hill out there. He was also warming up.
I know, and that's the big argument, but hear me out. There's no way Boone would have gone to Nestor if Tanner was available. Bullpen is managed differently.
No, of course.
And the Yankees probably win that game, or maybe win that game, likely win that game, and they may win the series.
Right. Even if they lose the other two, right?
Yeah.
It would have been a series as opposed to what felt like a blowout.
That is I've talked to Sean, but I haven't been face-to-face with Morash in a while because I was off for 2 weeks. He was off this week. That's one of the first questions I want to ask him. Do you regret that take that we just played? Or would he double down on it and say, no, we were that close and he was a great reliever and you got to go it to win it? Because I could see backing that up and saying, yeah. I know it sounds nuts now because Tanner Scott's on the IL and he left as a free agent and Spencer Jones is rocking the world. But last year, it may have been the difference between a world's championship and not. I was talking about that with the Mets the other night on the Rico Bronya, where you could download wherever you download your podcast. Last year, I don't believe there's a trade the Mets could have made that would have changed the outcome of the NLCS. Like, let's say they traded for Tanner Scott. They were still losing to the Dodgers. Like, I don't think that they got blown out enough by the Dodgers in that 6-game series where I don't think there was a player available that could have changed the trajectory of the way that series went.
Yeah.
That is not the case with the New York Yankees. It's just not.
No, it's not. And I'm looking at Tanner Scott. He was okay with the Padres last year after he was traded from Miami, but this year he's been bad.
Yeah. Well, forget this year, though, because it was a rental. There's no guarantee he would have been brought back.
Yeah, good point.
So from a rental standpoint, could the Yankees have won the World Series if they traded for Tanner Scott? Yes. The Mets wouldn't have made a difference, based on the way things played out. Jake is up in Boston. What's going on today, Jake?
What's going on, boys? Let me shift to football for 1 second.
Yes.
And there are two teams, the Steelers and the Chiefs, who still do the dorm thing for training camp. And we've come a long, long way since the Jets were struggling over at Hofstra. But the Chiefs and the Steelers tend to be consistently good, and they've had a lot of egos go through those dorms. And the NFLPA has had their little survey the last several years, and owners have responded to that survey by kissing the players' backside. But the opposite has been proven to work more often than giving players the lap of luxury. And at dorms, we're talking about players with roommates on twin beds, lackluster AC.
It wasn't that bad, Jake. It wasn't that bad.
Chemistry is built in those dorms. The guys play video games.
I gotta tell you, Jake, you're not wrong about that.
Let me tell you, there's a case in point last night. Very popular. We'll go pop culture. Travis Kelce made his relationship official for the first time in 2 years in those dorms. He was basically broadcasting that he doesn't have any privacy, and he was a little, I don't know, anxious, eager to do something with Taylor that he wasn't able to do with his boys right next door to him. And thus, you get a lot of natural testosterone in those practices because of those dorms when those guys are surrounded by other guys, and you get more effective practices, and you have fewer of them to work with than ever before. And thus, the dorms are the way to go, and the Steelers and the Chiefs, with their traditional NFL ownership since God knows when, have something on the rest of their opponents by the time they get to week one.
I gotta tell you,
they are actually working hard.
Jake, that is sound, dude. That is sound. I cannot argue with that. We know why they're not in dorms anymore. It's because all of these teams, including the Giants, have built these massive facilities at home. Quest Diagnostic Center, all those things. You can name them Jerry World. Whatever. Like, you could tell why they stay, because they spent so much money to build these things. You might as well just bring the fans there as opposed to going elsewhere. But what he just was talking about is so true.
Well, you experienced it.
The camaraderie that happens when you are living like a college student. And now, it wasn't as bad. You didn't have roommates after your first year, after your second year, I think. And then you could amenitize it however you wanted, bring in a 80-inch television, bring a specialty Serta bed or whatever the heck you want. It wasn't as bad as he was making it sound, But there was something about being away that did bring you closer.
Yeah.
It really did. There was zero distraction. Zero.
So you
Your family's only there for a couple of days at a time, over a week, and then they go home. Like it was great.
If I had to guess off the top of my head, I think the Giants moved away from the Albany dorm thing in 2008. Oh. So it was clearly after you were retired. That's that 100% sure, because I know in 2007 they were in Albany.
I think they did it in 2011.
Oh, it was even okay, maybe.
I think it was when the stadium opened.
You may be right, because I know for sure in 2007 I remember being up in Albany.
Right.
I remember it. I think even 2008. So maybe it was 2011. Right. Either way, you were...
2013.
13.
Jesus.
Right, so even later.
Wow. Okay. So 2013. Would you have preferred this versus that?
No, I'd rather go to Albany.
Really?
100%.
Like our last caller saying?
100%.
Do you think the players feel that way?
The Giants won their two Super Bowls.
I know, but...
With training camp in Albany.
No, you're right. So you think there's a jinx that they haven't won a Super Bowl because they're not doing it anymore?
No, just there's just something about team building when it's... You have to be around everyone.
Like our last caller said.
And you really get to know everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why you like you're still close with a lot of those guys.
From a fan perspective, because obviously that is a player perspective, I respect the hell about it. From a fan perspective, I miss it. It was very campy.
Oh, it was awesome.
It was really cool.
I still have good relationships from people I met 27, almost 30 years ago.
Yeah.
28 years ago. Like, they're still friends. And they were just people who lived in Albany.
No, I can imagine.
You know what I mean? So... In fact, Andrew Catalan, who was my play-by-play guy for the CBS,
yeah.
He used to cover it up in Albany.
That was cool.
He was a kid.
I think I remember that now.
He was a kid, but yeah. He would cover training camp in Albany.
I remember, and we're going to do our Giants show next week, day of the trade deadline, so we'll do a dueling trade deadline Giants show July 31st, and it's cool over there. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But I'll never forget the shows up in Albany. Like, they would set us up in the bleachers.
Yeah.
And we would do the show in the bleachers.
I remember hiking up there after practice. I go sit with Mike and Dog and just have these conversations about whatever.
That's true. That's
awesome. I didn't
mind
it. Fans would just sit there, turned around.
It was like the middle of it.
Sitting the wrong way, but whatever. Watching back because the setup was in the shade. So, I didn't mind that. Albany, I mean. I actually loved it. I embraced it.
They'll never bring it back, but it was awesome.
Of course.
You are right. We have a Cinco de Favo coming up in a few minutes. We'll get back to your phone calls at 888-808-1019. A little after 5 o'clock, we'll be joined by Jack Curry. He is the guy. He is the Yankee fans' trade rumor pulp. What he says, you listen to. So be very curious to hear from Jack Curry as he joins us in a few minutes. It's Evan and Tiki on The Fan.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find The Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.